Hello and welcome to The Game Shelf. This is a podcast where we discuss role-playing games, classics as well as forgotten masterpieces. Today we'll talk with Ian McAllister. And now we say hello and welcome to Ian McAllister. Hello, hello.
Hello, how are you doing?
Just fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you very much for having me on the cast.
You are the creator and host of the Tabletop News podcast called Brainwaves, and also the host of the site called Giant Brain. Is this correct?
That is, yeah.
This is a bit of a new one for me, since I usually do these in my mother tongue, which is not English, but Swedish. So we'll try to do this the best I can, and if I do the occasional Swenglish idiom, I hope that you will correct me.
I'll do my best. My Swedish is non-existent, and your English is fantastic, so...
This is an interview podcast, and we interview people about games they like. So what game have you brought from your shelf today?
Well, from my shelf, which is behind me, actually, at the moment you might actually be able to see it. There's a copy of it up there, actually, is the absolutely fantastic Blades in the Dark from John Harper. Signed by John Harper, and it's from Evil Hat Productions in the United States.
What kind of game is it, and what does it do that no other game does?
What kind of game is Blades in the Dark? You basically play the bad guys. It's kind of like Ocean's 11, but set in a sort of slightly Victorian, sort of slightly sort of steampunk's the wrong word, sort of cold punky kind of vibe to it, with like ghosts and magic and that kind of thing, if you want it. It's like the film Heat, but the target is a reliquary of ancient artifacts. And you play the bad guys. Very specifically, you play criminals. And the setup of the game is, if you go for the sort of standard setup that's in the game, which exists in the game to get you going, it's basically like the leader of one of the gangs in the area has just died. Their gang is on the down, and there's an opportunity for your tiny gang of folk to get in there and make something of themselves, make a name for themselves.
So the basic setup is that you try to build your own gang in this strange Victorian era fantasy setting.
Yeah, that's it. And it can be all sorts of gangs. So not only do you create a character, which might be as normal as the guy who goes around punching people in the face and shaking them down for money, to someone who communes with the ghosts and spirits of the world, you also create a gang together. So you like have a gang sheet in the middle, as well as all your individual character sheets. You have this gang sheet. So you could be, the sort of basic setup is you're just thieves. You go around and steal things. Great. But you could be smugglers. You could be assassins. You could be moving goods around. You could be all sorts of things, really.
As long as you do something with Blades in the Dark.
Yeah, lots of crime in the dark. Yeah, the setting is very grim's maybe the wrong. It is kind of grim, but it's grim in a very sort of like actiony way. One of the setting things, which I'm sure we'll come to, is that basically the sun doesn't exist anymore for historical reasons, and the setting is very dark and moonlit Victorian streets, and that sort of Peaky Blinders-y kind of vibe. If you've ever seen Peaky Blinders in the UK, that sort of like vibe to it, certainly.
Well, let's start with the world then. We mentioned Victorian. You used the word coal punk, which I suppose is kind of adjacent to steampunk.
Yeah, it's a lot hard to pin down Blades exactly, but my understanding about Blades' history is it sort of comes from games that John Harper ran around his table, the idea for the game and the actual sort of background of it. Like, very brief history is that at some point in the dim and distant past of the world, the Emperor broke the gates of death, and that caused all sorts of horrible ghosts and things to flood into the world, and the sort of sun to be shattered, and the whole world to be plunged into a sort of eternal night. And the cities of the world are basically, they are surrounded by giant Tesla coils, like lots and lots of Tesla coils around the sides of the cities to keep the ghosts out. And you also have a faction within the main city that you play in is called Duskfall or Duskwall, depending on whether you want to pronounce it. It has both pronunciations in the book. The sort of core conceit of the game is that, like, the crimes you commit have consequences across the city. You start in like a little area of the city, and as you grow, you might venture into other areas, but pretty much you can't leave, or it's very expensive to leave Duskfall. There are trains that run between some of the other cities, but it's very hard to get out. So you have to stay and deal with the consequences of your actions. The factions you've annoyed, the factions you've sort of joined up with will help you out, but the ones that you've like pissed off will come back to haunt you, sometimes literally haunt you, depending on what you've done.
What kind of factions are these? Are there the classic fantasy tropes of dwarves in the mountains and elves in the woods, or are there more heavy religious themes or anything else that makes the world feel different?
There are religious factions. It's mostly sort of humans, basically sort of humans. The setting's quite open for interpretation, so there's sort of a broad stroke saying, you know, Duskfall, you can't leave. You have to deal with the consequences of your actions. There are ghosts. There are like sort of some sort of fantastical machines and that kind of thing if you want it. But there's a lot of filling the world with what you want from the game. So like session zero stuff is quite important in Blades. And what one of the things it encourages you to do is your first session to be sitting down, creating characters together, creating your gang, and doing your first job together as well. Going on a heist or whatever your criminal gang is. So yeah, you can fill it with quite broad strokes. So you can go really mystical and magical and be involved with that stuff. Or you could keep it very mundane. Your guys who go around the neighborhood shaking people down for money, and obviously those people belong to someone else, so you're pissing off another faction, and how do you deal with them, and so on and so forth. You can keep it very mundane. The world can be filled with your imagination. There are areas outside Duskfall that you could go to, but ghosts live outside there. The trains that run in between the cities have a faction that looks after them that basically sort of batters ghosts away with gigantic electrical poles and that kind of thing as the trains rush between cities. One of the core conceits of the game is that everything belongs to someone else. Even when you're setting up, you owe favors to one faction or you've pissed off another faction to get your little piece of turf that you start with. And every time you go after something, it belongs to someone else.
Hmm.
There's factions. The Fire Brigade is a faction. They turn up if you pay them enough, but they're linked to other people. There are some heavy religious elements if you want it in there. There is a faction that comes after you, sort of state religions and all sorts of things. Like there's the Church of Ecstasy, which is like the sort of imperial religion that very much believes in the body and humans not partaking in ghosts and magic and that kind of thing. Sort of Inquisition-y kind of type of factions. Like say the Fire Brigade is a faction. They're a criminal faction that you can go up against. The Inkwells are the journalists of the city and they are a criminal faction. Everyone's a criminal faction of some description, or they're factions you can go up against. Maybe they're technically like government institutions, but they're all like corrupt and manipulable, and you can friend them if you want to. The Bluecoats, which are the police of the world, can be gone up against. You know, there's loads of sort of inspiration in there for a GM to like pick and choose what they want from the world.
It sounds like the two big themes I'm picking up so far is that it's an urban game and that it's focused on death and the macabre, maybe, but also that it's focused on corruption of many kinds. But mainly the money-related ones, yes?
Very much so. Like you are playing bad guys, so you are absolutely up for corruption of all sorts. So you want to lean into those tropes of being the bad guys. You want to steal things. The game's very focused on sort of getting you to the action of like heist films. It doesn't want you to sit around and plan. It very much wants to cut to the action. Okay, so you're going to break into this bank. It doesn't want you to sit in there planning for hours and hours like something more traditional like Shadowrun might.
Mm-hmm.
It wants you to basically be like, okay, so you're breaking in through the window at the top of the building, or you're breaking through the front door. How does that go? And you sort of cut to the action quite quickly. So it's very, very focused on getting you into the crimes and getting you into the action very quickly, and then the consequence of that action.
Could we try to describe a standard session? What do you do in the game? Obviously, you go on heists, like you mentioned, and how does that work around the table, so to speak?
I can describe like what a session zero might look like if you're picking up Blades for the first time. It very much encourages you to create your characters together. So you take playbooks. If you're familiar with Apocalypse World and those kind of games, it does have playbooks. You've got a very basic layout and you can make a few choices. And then you've got a sort of very, very broad strokes character. Not a lot of detail, but you've got your stats and your skills and things like that you can use to interact with the game. You create your little gang sheet, thieves, and the sort of basic setup of the game. And then it encourages you to get straight into a heist. So maybe the GM will have come with some kind of idea of what that is. There's a setup in the book for getting going with that. In this case, it's a group called the Red Sashes. You're going to go and steal things for them, either steal things from them or for them, for another faction in this area called Crow's Foot. You would very much cut to the action straight away. So you're working against the Red Sashes. They have a weird sword academy. The sort of nobles of the city send their nearest and dearest to you, their kids to learn Iruvian sword school sort of fighting. And GM would be encouraged to cut to the action. So rather than like planning like the heist and looking at blueprints, that kind of thing, be like, okay, so we're getting in through the cellar because there's a lot of rivers through Duskfall, kind of sort of almost slightly Venice-like. So there's lots of little river bits you can get into. So maybe like pull up underneath this sort of hidden bit of the Red Sashes sort of harbor that you know about through a friend, and you get in through the basement. So your entry point is the basement, and the GM would then make what's called an engagement roll, which would be based on like sort of like you're sort of like broad stroke, what do you have that allows you to get into this place and get out there? Do you have contacts, that kind of thing? And that gives them an idea of like, what position do you end up in? Are you sneaking in that door and everything's gone fine? Or do you open the door to find like three Red Sash students walking down the corridor towards you? And how do you deal with that?
It feels a bit more, well, zoomed out, so to speak, than the very traditional zoom in approach of, say, Shadowrun or the traditional fantasy settings for that matter as well.
Yeah, it starts quite broad strokes, certainly. You can do some planning, and there are some tools you can use to do a little bit more planning as the game goes on, but certainly a session zero would encourage you to get to the action quite quickly and do that first heist.
So it's not exactly a traditional game of that type. It's more evenly distributed power between the players and the GM, correctly?
Yeah, absolutely. The game very much encourages that the GM is a player as well. And if you are picking up Blades, if you're listening to this and you're thinking about picking up Blades in the Dark, there is a very, very good GM and player's responsibility section, which I thoroughly encourage you to read. It's one of those bits in role-playing books that we all have skipped in the past. You know, what is a role-playing game? That kind of section that's in every role-playing game since the dawn of time. Do not skip it in Blades, because Blades almost sort of board game-like wants it to be played in a very particular way.
Mm.
And if you try and pick it up and just run it in a more traditional sort of Dungeons & Dragons kind of way, it won't work as well. It really wants that collaboration around the table.
Mm.
It wants players to really push their agendas and push their characters. It encourages them to get into danger, to get into trouble, because trouble is interesting and fun. And also being in danger gets you experience.
You mentioned Apocalypse World before. Is it a derivation of the Apocalypse World engine, so to speak?
Yeah and no. More no than yes. It's definitely influenced by, for sure. John Harper has said that in interviews himself before now. It's not like an Apocalypse World engine book, like Monster of the Week or something like that. It is its own thing completely. There are some similarities. So, for instance, the core system itself is you roll a pool of d6 and you take the highest dice out of that. 6 is a good success, 2 sixes is a critical, 4 to 5 is succeed with consequences, and 1 to 3 is things kind of go badly in some way or form. Maybe they go forward, but badly. Some of that depends on the position, what's called the position in the game that you're in, determined by the GM. Most of the time you're in a risky position, so like things might go awry a bit. Sometimes you're in a controlled position, in which case, you know, you're in control of the situation. Everything's good. And it depends on the effect of your role as well. So like what you're going up against. If you try and punch down a building, your effect's going to be limited. I mean, you can try and punch the building, but you're probably just going to get a sore hand. Most of the time, it's standard is your outcome. So like you're going to set your explosives against the building and it'll do some damage. Or sometimes it'll be great, the effect of your role. You've got like the best explosive expert in the city to help you out with this, and he's made the most fantastic bomb ever, and it will definitely destroy this building. Those two things sort of define what the outcome of the rolls be and what that 6, 4, 5, 1, 3 thing mean in the outcome of the roll. So there are some sort of similarities in like sort of how the dice pool system works, but it is very different and feels very different. I've run some Apocalypse Worlds and I've played some as well, and it feels like a very different game. The moves and everything in Apocalypse World to me feel more prescriptive. You want to do this thing, you do this move for that thing, and it has a very particular outcome. The rolls in Blades tend to be a bit more open-ended. So like one of the skills is called command, for instance, and you could command in a very sort of aggressive way. You could like tell people what to do in a very aggressive sort of militaristic way, or you might be persuading them to do the thing, but you'd still be using command to do it. They're a little bit more open-ended. They're more skill rolls than particular moves like you would have in Apocalypse World.
And you use these during your heists, your yeah. smugglers runs, your whatevers. And the plan is to do one heist per session, roughly. Kind of like you're supposed to finish one reasonably sized dungeon per Dungeons & Dragons night?
So I would say that Blades kind of encourages shorter sessions. Most of the time, my group's pretty particular. We don't have a huge amount of time together, so we maybe have 2 to 3 hours max together to really play a game. Blades, you can easily get a good heist done, a good session done in 2 hours with downtime, which we'll come to, I'm sure. So yeah, it definitely encourages sort of shorter sessions, which I really like. As I've gotten older, I've become less of a fan of like really long sort of RPG sessions, like 4 or 5, 6 hour long sessions. I really like the sort of short focus games. I write mostly about board games. I like that, my board games as well, things that do a particular thing very well and keep it really nicely, tightly focused. And Blades really does that. And although it doesn't encourage planning, what it wants you to do is plan and flashback. So there's a core mechanic in the game called stress, which is a little pool of resources that every player has. And you can call on stress to do various things. You can call on it to like give you some extra dice. You can call on it to help out a friend. But one of the major things you can do with it is say, actually, I thought of something for this earlier, and flash back to your planning that hasn't happened, but also has. so you can make the planning relevant. It costs you a little bit of resource, but the planning can be relevant in context.
How does this stress mechanic work? Is it something you have a limited resource of that you spend, or is it something you accumulate that you know will cause you problems down the line?
You start with a pool of it. I'm trying to remember how much, but I can't remember off the top of my head. But you start with a pool of stress, and you use it over the course of the session. And then during downtime, which basically Blades happens in two sort of segments. You do a heist, and then there's the consequences of the heist, and then there's downtime, which can happen off screen or not, depending on your wish as a group. You have a pool of stress to use, and that depletes over the course of a session as you use it up. And then during downtime, you can get it back by indulging your vice. There might be other ways to get it back during the course of the session, depending on the GM. There's a lot of levers to pull in Blades, and you can pull them in different ways. But the core way to get it back is you indulge your vice. So your vice might be, it could be like your family. Your family could be your vice, where basically like you give money to your family because you owe alimony or you just want to look after them. Kind of. Or it could be as nasty as a drug habit. You know, you've got a dealer in town and you need to pay them off all the time and you need access to those drugs. It could be pit fighting, could be your vice. You go down the pits after a heist and...
Anything that gets the money burned, so to speak, between the heists. Yeah.
Yeah.
So in theory, you could have religion as a vice because you give all the money to the poor in the rules of the church.
Yeah, absolutely. You can have a variety of different things. There's a few suggestions on the sheet for what your vice can be. But as with everything in Blades, you can open that up and like discuss that with your GM if you want something a little bit different on there. So yeah, religion is definitely one that happens frequently.
But then you said you had three phases to the game. Standard play, in which you do a heist or a whatever you do, then there's consequences, and then there's the downtime. Those two, consequences and downtime, I've heard the terms before, but not in the context of Blade in the Dark. How does this work?
Sure. So you do your heist, it goes well or badly, or most of the time somewhere in between those two things. Then there's fallout from it. So you'll get sort of money in the game isn't tracked in like individual gold pieces. It's tracked by a sort of resource called coin. Coin's quite broad. So you get some coin off a job, depending on how much your patron or whoever's hired you to do it is paying you. Some of that will go straight into your pocket. Some of that will go into the gang stash. And coin is a measure of like what your sort of like circumstances are at a certain time, what sort of things you have access to and that kind of thing. And also, if your character gets retired at some point, it's also a sort of indicator of like what's their epilogue like. The main thing you get from heist though is reputation and heat. So every time you do a job, it'll get you reputation because people will hear about it. And you'll also draw the attention of the cops, which gets you heat, much like in Grand Theft Auto or a game like that. You sort of attract attention. And one of the nice things about the game is you can't really get reputation without getting heat, because you want people to know that you're doing crimes in order to get reputation. But in order to the people to know you're doing crimes, you attract heat. So those two things go up and you start off as what's called a tier zero gang with a stronghold. So you're pretty set in your little area, but no one really knows who you are or cares. And then this opportunity arises for you to climb the ladder. And you will, over the first sort of two, three sessions, you'll quickly become like a tier one gang, but you'll have a weak hold. So you're like going up the tiers, but your hold on that territory that you've now got is kind of tentative at best, and you've made some enemies along the way, and how are you going to deal with that? And that's sort of the course of campaign play, is like you're going to grow up the tiers, you're going to make some enemies, how are you going to deal with them, how are you going to like just go after them, are you going to go to war with them, because war is bad and certainly hurts you, or are you going to be more subtle about it, or somewhere in between those two things. The sort of like rewards for doing the heist is like coin, reputation, heat. And then in downtime, you might take care of heat. There's a bunch of different actions you can do. Some are specific, some are a little bit wider, like the skill rules that Blades has. So you could do something about heat. You could go out there and say, actually, it was that gang down the road that did that job, or, you know, go and beat up the police officer who's investigating it, or however you do it. You make a skill rule based on how you want to handle that. You maybe get to reduce your heat a little bit, like take the pressure off a little. If heat gets really bad, you can send someone to prison. I've never had that happen in one of my games, but there's a whole sort of prison sub-game you can play with one of your characters in prison, and there's a whole different thing there.
This is a kind of semi-play, because you don't sound very in character when you talk about these actions. Are you supposed to play your character, or approach it more like stat-specific board game-like?
That's kind of up to you a bit. I've experienced both, running and playing. So the actions are certainly quite prescribed. So like you reduce heat, you can heal yourself up. You can like engage in a long-term project, which could be all sorts of things. You could be making things or making your gang better, all that sort of stuff. So you could handle some of that in character if you wanted to, for sure. Or you could just handle it as like a quick downtime thing, even like via email, but in between sessions saying, I'm going to do this. You get a couple of actions per character, and then you can spend coin to get more if you want to. So it's very much up to the group. You could certainly handle it in downtime as part of the session and in character. And I've certainly done that myself. And it is quite fun to do that. One of the things that happens with downtime as well is that the GM gets to roll some stuff that are sort of like fallout from mission, which gives you sort of like inspiration for the next session. Little sort of bits and pieces, consequences that you might sort of put into the next session. But there's a little thing for the GM to do there.
All these systems sounds very different from the traditional kind of games like Call of Cthulhu BRP that we're used to here in Sweden, or Dungeons and Dragons, or what have you. Is there anything you would like to recommend to new players or new GMs? Something to keep top of the mind when you start up a new game of Blades in the Dark?
So first thing, as I said earlier, is definitely read the GM and Player's Responsibility section. That is really, really key to how the game works and how it wants to be played. Don't assume it's a traditional game where you're asking for a lot of rolls, that kind of thing. Because a lot of the time in Blades, for instance, from a GM's perspective, you're not rolling a single dice. GM never rolls a dice. Other than like engagement rolls and some downtime stuff, you are not making action rolls against the players at all. They roll, and there are consequences to that roll that you interpret with them. And there's a lot of good advice there. There's things like, one of them is like, be fans of the players, that kind of thing. There's lots of really good advice in there on how to run the game. The other thing is, Blades is a very heavily improvisational game, which will not suit all groups. And I completely understand that. It really wants the GM to be a player around the table, to be involved in like creating the world with the players. And it wants the players to not sit back and be passive. If you're passive as a player in Blades, you just won't get as much out of it. You'll get something from it, but it just won't quite be the same. You really need to sort of push your character and push to get into dangerous situations. Because as I mentioned earlier, like when you're, one of the situations you can get into is a desperate situation. And desperate situations give you experience.
How do you define desperate? Is it a life or death situation, or is it something that will cause you to gain heat or lose reputation or anything less as well?
One of the things I didn't mention earlier when we were talking about the sort of basic role system, this position, which is controlled, risky, and the other one is desperate. The normal role is called a risky standard role. So it's you're in a risky position, something might go wrong, and you're going to have standard effect. You're quite good at stabbing or whatever. What happens a lot of time, if risky rolls go wrong, if you roll 1 to 3, one of the things the GM can do is shift the entire situation to desperate. So more red sashes turn up, or the fuse fizzles on your bomb, or something like that. Something goes wrong, like really badly wrong. When you're in desperate, any roll you make has more consequences attached to it. But every time you roll, you get a little tick amongst one of the sort of groups of stats. There's 12 skills in the game. They're split across 3 stats, which are like the way to resist damage. And you get a little tick to basically push those skills up. If you fill out all the boxes on the top row, you get to push your skills up a little bit at the end of the session. So being in desperate situations is great. Like, you want to be in danger. And it's one of the things the game encourages the players to be, is basically don't wince from danger. Really got to lean into it. Because you'll get out, probably, mostly intact, kind of. But you'll come out of it with a bunch of XP as well, which is great.
Sounds like a cool dichotomy.
Yeah.
The players want to do things the characters are not comfortable with.
Yeah, very, very much so. Like, one of the things I found is, because you're playing criminals, and it really wants you to play the bad guys, it emphasizes that quite a lot. You're playing smugglers, you're playing drug dealers, you're playing people who like shake people down for cash. Some of the time, my players have felt uncomfortable a little bit with like what their characters would do. But they've kind of lent into it because the game encourages it.
Mm.
One of the other ways to get experience is, each character sheet has like a sort of trigger for that particular type of character. So like the bruiser type will get XP once or twice a session for like basically taking actions that are like sort of like physically violent and getting them into trouble and like using their physical presence. Whereas like a character like the spider, who's a mastermind, will get experience for being cunning and clever and coming up with interesting plans to do things. There's little triggers on there that is like, if you play this way, you're going to get some XP. You'll get some bennies for that. So play this way. Just little sort of guides to there, which is really, really nice.
Is there anything else you'd like to say about the basics, so to speak, of the system that we haven't mentioned so far?
So yeah, I don't think we've talked really about sort of the skills, like the character sheets in full, really. I mentioned like their skills, and there's sort of 3 segments of skills. One's under insight, one's under prowess, and one is under resolve.
Mm-hmm.
And those 3 segments are like sort of split up. And so like insight's all to do with like deception and understanding. So that kind of skill. prowess is about sort of physical strain and injury, so that's all the sort of fighting skills and that kind of thing. And resolve is about mental strain and willpower, so that's all the stuff to do with sort of ghosts and the mysterious. And so those are ways to resist what's called harm in the game. So one of the consequences to roles going wrong could be harm. And harm could be anything from you break a leg to you don't get home later, so your girlfriend is annoyed with you. Harm can be very interpreted in a lot of ways, as with a lot of stuff in Blades. And the other thing, you have your stress thing that makes you a bit better than the normal person in Dossful that we've talked about. But you also have skills as well, like special abilities that are only for your character. So, for instance, a spider that I mentioned earlier, he's a mastermind character. A couple of times a session, they can basically go, oh, I've thought of something for this, and help someone out with an extra dice without spending stress. They're so good at planning in advance that they can just do that. That's like their core ability. You can choose something else, but like basically the book says, if you want to just play a normal spider as your first time, tick these stats, tick these skills, and tick the special ability, you're good to go. Book's very good for that, for starring. Do follow that advice if you're playing for the first time. Just take the core stuff and you're good to go. And then as you grow, as you get those XP triggers for like being sneaky or punching people or whatever your trigger is, that XP gets you more special abilities as you go. So there's loads of different ones to take. So like some of them can start being able to punch ghosts in the face, that kind of thing. You can physically interact with ghosts all of a sudden, or you can conjure up thunderstorms or all sorts of things. And then you can also take special abilities from other playbooks. Not exactly multi-class, but you can sort of take ideas from other, like you can take ideas from other playbooks into your character and sort of start to make your character really unique. At the start, they're quite broad strokes and you don't really know who you are. And Blades is one of those indie games which really encourages you to play to find out. You've got a broad strokes idea of what they are. They're a bruiser, they're a mastermind, they're a sneaky assassin. And then how exactly who they are and their background, all that comes out during play.
Who do you think would like to try Blades in the Dark? What kind of player? What kind of GM?
Everyone. I'd really encourage you to try it as a player or a GM, because the book that I find is a really good read. It's a really interesting book about, like, a lot of the GM and player advice I've talked about earlier speaks to how we approach games a lot of the time. Like, the very traditional model is, of course, GM brings pretty much everything to the table and players get involved a bit and react, but basically the emphasis is on the GM to bring the fun a lot of the time. And Blades speaks to a different paradigm for that, where the GM is just another player at the table and everyone has to sort of bring a bit to the table themselves. Don't put so much pressure on the GM to bring all the fun to the table, which is really, really nice. And I really like that philosophy. So I think it's a good read for all role players from that point of view, like just a different idea of how you can run games. And I've taken that myself to other games I've run. I just really encourage everyone to give it a try, preferably for a few sessions.
Is it the mindset in general, or is it anything specific you've decided to port to other games you've used, or some house rules you've introduced into Blades in the Dark that you think should be standard?
I've taken a lot from like the idea of like involving the players early on, especially in sort of like session zero things. I've really become a fan of the idea of session zero, where you all sit. So if you're not familiar with session zero, folks who are listening, the idea is that the GM doesn't like make the game up on their own with lonely fun. Like they're doing their own thing, and that's a totally valid way of doing things, but they're not just doing that and then bringing a game, you come to the table and play. The first session is you all sit around, create your characters, and there's a bit of interaction there straight off, and there's a bit of investment from the players into the world. And I find that's really, really gives dividends to the game to come, because the players are invested right up from the start, which is really, really nice. So I've taken that certainly. As to house rule, there's a lot of levers in Blades, and you can levers? Am I American? Levers. There's a lot of levers and Blades, and you can pull them in a variety of different ways. And if you're the GM, it's really good to have a handle on how to do those. As an example, there's another mechanic we haven't really talked about called clocks. You might be fighting a bunch of guys, that'd be a single roll, an outcome, and then you'd move on to the next bit. Maybe there's consequences from that. Maybe you defeat them all, or maybe they're chasing you down the corridor, or something's gone horrendously wrong and they've pushed you back out the door into the street and the blue coat patrol is coming down the... Any possibility there, but it's quite a wide-ranging outcome and it's not meant to be individual sort of back and forth rolls, lots and lots of rolls. One roll to determine the outcome of the situation. However, the GM can make clocks happen. And clocks are basically a countdown idea where they might be like sort of 4, 6, or 8 segment clocks. And basically what they're used for is, let's say some of the team are like fighting off the security guards for the bank you're in, and one or two of you is working on the lock for the bank vault. The GM might start a clock that says the bank vault is open. and you would be making rolls against the sort of bank vault door to like get that open, and you'd be ticking segments off that clock depending on how well you did. Or there might be like a silent alarm in the bank and the GM sort of ticks off saying danger's coming, which is six segments, and that he just ticks that off every now and again just to put pressure on you. No rolls involved, he just ticks it to just put a little bit of pressure on you. There's multiple ways to use these things. So back to our fight example, like normally fights are just like one roll, one and done consequences. You might, however, have an epic duel or something against a particularly difficult or big villain that you've had in the piece at some point. And that might be a back and forth fight. There might be a lot of rolls as you go back and forth as to who's going to win that duel. So there's lots of levers you can pull in Blades to make the game act differently. I haven't found a need for house rolls because of that, because I've always found something within Blades that I can use to make the game do what I want. But your mileage may vary. You may never use clocks. I mean, I've gone 2-3 sessions without using clocks, and then I had a session where I've used lots. You might just use individual rolls. You might use lots of clocks, you might not. You might shift some stuff into downtime. You might do some role playing in downtime, you might not. You might just use the abilities that are in downtime and just wash over it in 20 minutes, just some rolls and done. There's a lot of different ways to approach it, which I really like. And it encourages you to do that. It doesn't say like, it wants to be approached in a particular way, for sure. And it has a certain philosophy about how it should be run and played. But it also is generous with how you use its tools to make that play happen.
It's obviously a game system that's been used in various ways by other games as well. And the Forged in the Dark engine, as it's been called, has been used for, I honestly don't know for how many games now. Do you have any other games you would like to pitch that are derivatives of Blades in the Dark?
The only one I've really run is Scum and Villainy. I backed the original Blades Kickstarter, so I got a bunch of stuff and occasionally get a new RPG just in my drive-through inbox from that campaign. Scum and Villainy was actually one of the first ones I ran with my regular group. We ran Scum and Villainy and then we ran Blades. I do like Scum and Villainy. So it's space-based. So rather than having a gang sheet like you do in Blades, you have a ship that you fly around this universe. It's a bit more pulpy. So you still have this thing where you're doing jobs and there's sort of three ships that are like totally not Serenity out of Firefly, totally not the Millennium Falcon, and definitely not Cowboy Bebop, Honest Governor. But they are those things. So you can be like those sort of three types of sort of like scum. And you're doing jobs in different solar systems, but you can leave to other solar systems quite easily. And the game encourages you to go to those other solar systems while the heat in one place sort of pans down. So it's a little less, it's much less grim. It's definitely more pulpy. It's good fun. We had a lot of fun with it. It was a little less focused. There is some stuff in Scum and Villainy where you can have like, I can't remember what they call it, but basically I think they call it the Way. It's totally not the Force, honest. The universe is a little bit more filled in, but not very. So you can sort of interpret these things in any way you want. You can have the Way in your game or not, as you wish. You can have sort of AI in your game or not, as you wish. You can sort of pick and choose a little bit. It's definitely less tight, I'd say, Scum and Villainy than Blades. It's a little willier. And my group actually responded much better to the sort of the tightness of Blades and its universe, which I was kind of surprised by actually myself, because they've tended to not get on terribly well, things like Apocalypse World and some other indie games I've run. But Blades has really, really captured their imagination, really, really grabbed them. I think because with Blades and Forged in the Dark systems, if you're not fully comfortable, like really leaning into a lot of role playing, if you're a little bit more nervous about that, there are some nice mechanical things to hold on to.
Mm.
The system kind of disappears when you don't need it and is there and very easy to remember when you do. The core system is extremely simple to hold in your head. Everything you need for your character is on your character sheet in front of you. And there's lots of good player guides from player sort of handouts and guides and all sorts of things directly from Evil Hat. They've produced a lot of stuff that's really helpful for running the game. I've not played or run many other games. I'd really like to run Band of Blades, which is their sort of military fantasy setting game where you are a group retreating from an oncoming force. I don't know how it works, but it sounds very intriguing. But yeah, there's loads of others.
Is there anything else you would like to say about the official stuff from Evil Hat? Is there a particularly good player guide or a splat book or a good module of some kind that people should get if they're interested in trying Blades in the Dark?
So Blades isn't really a game that lends itself well to modules because you're sort of coming up with stuff on the fly and improvisation. That said, Sean Nittner, who's worked with John Harper before, and John Harper himself has put out occasional different, like, what's called the starting situation. So the starting situation Blades, we've talked about the sort of crow's foot situation. They've put out different starting situations, so you can use those for inspiration. And there's a few other places that have done that. If you want to try Blades as a one-shot, my friend Guy Milner, who runs Burn After Running, put out some stuff about that, to like sort of run it at a con as a one-shot. I would say that Blades sings best when run as campaign. You can run it as a one-shot, but you really want that faction reputation play in the background of the game, that sort of like that living world to come through. And that only really happens once you're sort of 3-4 sessions into the game. Like they say, these can be short sessions. Blades has like the structure of like a short TV series. That's kind of the idea. Like, sorry, 8-10 episodes. It actually encourages this in the book, is to like run maybe like a short season of it, like that kind of length, 8-10 episodes. And then sort of, do you want to run more? Maybe you want to like time jump it to a year down the line when you're more established, or, you know, that kind of thing. So yeah, it definitely encourages that. But the Evil Hat produced a lot of good sort of player guides. And in fact, just in our Discord the other day, someone was sharing like the updated sort of player guidance sheets that John Harper put back. I think it was actually Sean Nittner put out. So they're staying on top of it. They keep it updated. They put stuff out all the time. And this year, they're putting out a new Blades in the Dark called Dagger Isles, which is concentrating on a different part of the world. As I understand it, that's going to be a standalone book, but will also have stuff in it if you run normal Blades in the Dark as well. That may be worth looking out for, especially if they've like sort of tidied up some of the book layout and language and that kind of thing, because they've had like 6 years of it being out now, thereabouts. So it's very likely that they'll have tidied up some of the language and advice and that kind of thing in there as well. So yeah, that's coming to Kickstarter later in the year, I believe.
Is there something else you would like to say about Blades in the Dark that you feel haven't come up in the conversation so far?
I've said this on the cast and in some of my writing as well. There's this weird thing I find in role-playing games where the hobby doesn't seem to want to learn much from new ideas that come out. So like in board games, when like a new game out comes out that captures the zeitgeist, like Dominion for deck building, or like worker placement comes out with Kaelas and Agricola, a lot of games tend to copy that. They tend to capture that mechanic and they tend to do lots with it. When something quite like interesting like Blades in the Dark comes out, and I'd hesitate to say kind of important, an interesting book about how we interact together around the table, it's got a lot of talk about that in it. Not very much of that translates over into other games. Yes, people use like Forge in the Dark system, that kind of thing, but not a lot of that finds it into the mainstream in things like the new edition of D&D or Call of Cthulhu or anything like that. A very odd thing to me, coming from sort of tabletop board gaming where that happens a lot. It doesn't seem to happen very much in role-playing at all, which I think is kind of a shame. I wrote about this in the blog once, that the player's advice in Dungeons & Dragons, the fifth edition current Dungeons & Dragons books, is like, it's a paragraph. There's like a paragraph of player's advice in however many hundred-page book that is, quite a lot, which is kind of weird, right? Considering how popular it's been, and there might be better advice in some of the new starter sets, I don't know because I haven't seen them. But in the core books that you're encouraged to buy, there's very little, which is kind of weird to me. And Blades has got like 4 or 5 pages in a much more spelt book about, here are your player responsibilities, here's how you should have sort of approached the game, and here's how you should play it, whereas like something like D&D has none of that. It's weird because all the emphasis is on the GM to kind of have figured that out and tell you how to play it. If you're a completely new group, you've watched Critical Role and you play it like that, I don't know, who knows. It's a weird thing to me. I think there's a lot to be learned from Blades in the Dark, even if you don't play and run it. Pick up a book and read some of John Harper's writing on it as well, and like how he approaches game design, because he's a really interesting designer. One of his other games that he made with Sean Nittner called Agon. Agon is a game about Greek heroes and tragedy. Agon is fantastic. And it got an emphasis on shorter sessions, an emphasis on shorter campaigns. And the core conceit of Agon is that you're a group of Greek heroes heading home from a war, it doesn't really matter which one, and the gods, being what they are, waylay you with weird islands that have problems on them that you attempt to solve, usually quite badly, because you're role players and that's what happens. Again, I really recommend checking it out. And again, it's a game that wants to be played in a particular way. I played in a fantastic campaign run by Gary Barabank, Gaz from the Smart Party, a UK podcast. That was one of my favorite memories of lockdown gaming. We ran about a sort of year of Agon sessions, about, I think it's about 10, 12 islands we ran, and it was fantastic. Hands down brilliant. Takes a little while to get going, again, like Blades, it requires a little bit of investment to really see the really cool in it, but it's just great. It's really, really good. I'm running it just now for my local group. Oh, that's a lot of fun to like see it from the other side of the table.
That sounds lovely. And with that, we will stop the discussion of Blades in the Dark and make a few quick mentions of what's happening this Easter. You are gonna skip across the North Sea and end up in Gothenburg. How come?
So I was invited by Pontus, who is involved in the committee, to come across and be Brainwaves over there. I did wonder if he had the wrong cast initially, because we're quite a small cast in terms of actual cast. But he was very nice and invited us across. It'll just be myself. It won't be any of fellow co-hosts. But yeah, I was delighted to be invited and really looking forward to coming across and seeing what the Swedish gaming scene's all about.
So what happens this Easter, in case we have any international listeners, because I believe the Swedish ones are quite well informed on this, is that every Easter we have Gothcon, the biggest Swedish gaming convention, specifically focused on, well, role-playing games, Warhammer, lots of board games, and so on. What are your plans for Gothcon?
Still sort of trying to work those out. I've got a lot of information from the Discord server about the Swedish companies I'm going to check out. I'm totally up for basically anything. So if anyone's listening and wants to meet up and show me their games, please do. I'll be checking out all the exhibitors that I can't have access to in the UK, certainly. Definitely looking forward to like talking to people like Free League, because I've played some of their games and they are fantastic. So yeah, it'd be good to see them. And yeah, I really like checking out smaller sort of local companies as well, because people whose games I don't know. That's the thing I really like about going to conventions, is coming across things that I have no idea existed and are awesome and cool. So yeah, I'll be bringing some basic audio equipment, because I can't carry all this stuff and my big mic and everything, but I'll have some lavalier mics and a little recording equipment with me. Hopefully do some interviews over there. I'm interviewing some members of the committee. That'll be on the 16th of February. I'll be interviewing some members of the committee in the Giant Brain Discord, and that'll be going out as a podcast as well, just sort of chatting about the history of Gothcon, Swedish gaming scene in general, because I don't know a lot about the Swedish gaming scene, and it'll be interesting to find out about that. It's the first time we've ever been invited to a convention, so yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
I look forward to seeing you there. Is there something else you would like to recommend that's not necessarily connected to Gothcon or the Blades in the Dark? Another game people should try? A podcast they should listen to? A Kickstarter they should keep an eye out for? Or something completely different?
I mentioned the Smart Party early on. They're friends of mine, friends of the cast. Definitely check them out. They call themselves the UK premier RPG podcast, and I think they're actually right on that. They've interviewed loads of interesting folk, including Free League a couple of times, about all sorts of things in the RPG scene. They just put out one on the OGL debacle that's been going on with Matt from Steamforge Games, who make the Dark Souls RPG and that kind of thing, getting his perspective. We just put out a cast on that. Self-plug for a moment, we just put out a cast on that as well. The last Brainwaves cast, 114, was about the OGL, and we interviewed Linda Cadega, who broke the story, as well as a local RPG publisher called Handiwork Games, who make the Beowulf 5th edition RPG. Their head, John Hodgson, is a friend of mine. We interviewed him about his perspective on the whole thing. What a complete mess. Other than that, Burn After Running that I mentioned earlier, that's Guy Milner's blog. That's really good if you're looking for lots of advice on running one-shots at cons. Guy's a really seasoned convention GM, really good GM, has a lot of advice on like taking games that might not traditionally be seen as being able to be run as one-shots and saying, hey, here's how you can do that. Like Blades in the Dark, he's got a whole sort of setup for running Blades in the Dark as a good one-off. Go and look at our own site, The Giant Brain, for lots of reviews and that kind of thing. I write about RPGs as well as tabletop games whenever I can. I don't take on RPG reviews a lot from like Kickstarters and that kind of thing, because I actually want to play the game and like get into it, that kind of thing. But there are a few on there. I've written player reviews and GM reviews of Blades. Quick aside, I realized last year that a lot of the reviews that we get from RPG critics and that kind of thing tend to be very GM focused, because obviously GMs buy the thing. But there's very few reviews from a player's perspective. Like, how does it feel to be a player of that game? How does it feel to manipulate those systems that are in that game? So I've started trying to write reviews from both sides. A GON review that's up there is actually a player's review, because I played in the game and I wanted to write about it because it was so interesting and cool. And I'll be writing a GM's review of it once I've run it a few more times. So yeah, go and check those out.
And with that, we close the door to the United Kingdom and say thank you once again to Ian McAllister for coming to The Game Shelf.
Thank you very much for having me. Delighted to be here.
See you around.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. This was The Game Shelf with Ian McAllister. My name is Pontus Kjellberg, and the music is made by Hicham Chihiri. Thank you for listening.